Today, we're speaking to Abel Diaz-Gonzalez, an assistant professor here at Maastricht University who researches the role that ecosystems play in supporting social entrepreneurship. The experience that Abel has really shines through in this conversation, and we learn how we can use business as a force for good to change the world. If you want to learn how you can do that and how your ecosystem supports you, make sure you listen along. Abel, welcome to the show. Could you please introduce yourself and what you do at Maastricht University?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me and for having invited me. My name is Abel. I also react to Abel. I am assistant professor in the Department of Organization, Strategy, and Entrepreneurship, and I'm currently responsible for the academic component of social entrepreneurship at the university with several courses. I also do research in social entrepreneurship and also, well, actively participating in several networks and projects on the topic.
Wonderful. And could you also maybe walk us through how you actually got here to Maastricht?
That's very interesting, let's say, story. I was already living and working in Brussels before, where I was doing my PhD, and I started to work there. And after 3 different LinkedIn messages from people in my network, I received the announcement of the vacancy that was offered here in Maastricht University. So I read it and I applied in the last day, last minute, because I was busy with other things. It was a very interesting process with very interesting colleagues asking me very also interesting questions. It took about 6 months with all the different calls, Zoom calls. Then there was a visit, and I received, the last day of May, the news that I was selected to be here. So this is how I made it.
Very nice. And could you maybe also walk us a bit through what you did in Brussels in your time there, what your PhD was about as well?
Absolutely. So I arrived in Brussels in 2015 with the intention to do a master's in management. So I was there just with the idea of staying in Brussels just for 1 year. I can tell you it was a very fun year because I met many people from all over the world. And the last week of my stay in Brussels, I was invited for a talk to whom it was at that moment the supervisor of the PhD. He started to talk to me about this opportunity. He has mentioned to me this before. And he mentioned to me about social entrepreneurship and ecosystems, but I was not really grasping what he wanted to say. And then in the end, he invited me to do the PhD. And basically, I was there working for 4 years on the topic, 4.5 years on this research. But quickly, it became a very interesting international experience. The idea at the very beginning, because the PhD was founded by 3 organizations at that moment, Close the Gap, which is a social enterprise in Belgium. Also, there was a publishing house involved in the financing, and Euroclear. I think the main idea for them coming together to fund or to provide the funding for this PhD was to study this phenomenon in Belgium. It was a hot topic in Belgium at the moment. I'm talking about 2016, but I ended up doing little research in Belgium. There was a lot of, I will say, effectuation because there was a project funded by the Belgian government in Bolivia about building and developing local ecosystems to support vulnerable people there in Bolivia. So because of my background, I'm from Colombia, and maybe because I also speak Spanish, then I was invited to once go to Bolivia and see what was going on there with the project. And, I quickly click with the people there, also with their needs, with what was going on. And I believe I was helping them to be a bridge before what the project was expected to do from the Belgian side and what they were able to do in Bolivia. So I was being this middleman several times, and I ended up doing the research there in Bolivia, then quickly in Ecuador, then in Peru, then I went to Colombia, and I started to build this network together with many people, and I stayed there in Brussels. And And I think I will bring this point immediately, because then there's a very interesting link here. when you talk to these, when I was talking to these people there in for my PhD, and the objective of my PhD was to study how to develop ecosystems and how ecosystems could support social entrepreneurs. That was the main, the silver line of the PhD. So when I was talking there with hundreds of entrepreneurs, some of them very miserable, poor entrepreneurs, some others very innovative, I was always asking them in the end, how can I help you? Yeah, and they were bringing different ideas, most of them having problems with their products in the market, some of them not having a strategy, some of them not being able to scale. But also I was talking to many people at universities in there. And I was putting all these needs on a backpack, this, there. But I was also comparing. So these people in Bolivia need something that that person in Ecuador could have. Or this university in Colombia is doing a project or a program that the university in Bolivia can benefit from. When I was like in the third year of all these iterations, I probably went 20 or 30 times to Bolivia. I realized that there needed to be something done. So we were discussing with people across the network, also with my supervisor in Belgium, and we found out that we needed to develop a platform. A platform to have these people just exchanging ideas. And this platform quickly became an idea to submit a project to the European Commission. How can we put all these universities together, but also bring in universities from Europe, Belgium, Italy, Bulgaria, Austria? Because from here, you can learn how these universities innovate, not having resources, not having infrastructure, not having intellectual property, not having knowledge transfer processes, how these universities really connect with society where the problems are real. We have also problems in Europe, but there the problems are more pronounced. So how could we develop a platform to put people together to exchange and to learn each other? So we developed the project. It was really at the end of my PhD, when Corona was also starting, and I received this question from my supervisor, you have to decide either you focus to finish your PhD, because you have to finish the PhD, or you focus on this project. And I said, I'll focus on both. So I was putting all these ideas together, not sleeping, working with them, because of course, the time difference with Latin America, you can work in the evening with them. And then the project was actually funded. Was a project that received 1 million euro to develop the platform to bring social enterprises and entrepreneurs together, also with universities, and to develop capacities, local capacities at the universities to support them. So not giving them the fish, but teaching them how to fish. Yeah. And this was like, I believe, one of the babies that came out of that PhD, because it was also a realization of putting all these people together. And I started to work afterwards as a project coordinator and teaching right before coming here to Maastricht.
Wow, that is honestly hugely impressive to get that funding and actually use the insights that you're already gaining to then actively build that network to help people. And that's very much also building that ecosystem, I think, that you were aiming for. But before we maybe dive more in depth of how this all works, I think it might be useful if we define some terms. So could you maybe define what is a social enterprise first?
So I think you can answer this question yourself. But of course, it's a very contested term. So we have social entrepreneurship as the field. We have social entrepreneur as the individual, and we have social enterprise as the organization. Three different levels of thinking here. But a social enterprise basically is, as an any other enterprise, something that has, as part of their DNA, ambition and dreams to solve a complex social problem. Regardless of the profit orientation, regarding on how the company is organized, the DNA, they wake up and go to sleep with that ambition and that drive to address these social complex issues. What are complex social issues? Weak problems, so poverty, inequalities, lack of clean water and sanitation, well, you name it. But they develop a business model based on that particular type of problem. They recognize within the problem a business opportunity. And they develop the whole system. They develop product or services based on those particular issues. And they try to address them by using innovative business ideas. So the component, the innovative component of a social enterprise is very high. Because while some people will see the problem and will get stuck there in why are these problems here, no one is working on them, a social entrepreneur quickly pick the problem as an opportunity and develop a viable business model based on their ambitions and based on what and the resources they can mobilize.
Perfect. I think that's a great definition. Also, as a social entrepreneur myself, I think that is a wonderful way to phrase it. Beyond that, I think it's important to also define ecosystem. So could you maybe take a moment for that?
That's also a very big responsibility that you are putting on my shoulders to bring this definition here. But I believe that an ecosystem, based on what we know from biology, could be defined as a working living system where you have a composition of many different little parts or elements. So we have in an ecosystem, of course, actors. These actors should be well interconnected. That's the first condition. There should be an interconnection between all these actors. There should be clear links between them so that they can have different type of exchanges, tangible or intangible type of resources. And then in the ecosystem, these actors also play particular roles. So there are clear positions among them. But what makes an ecosystem interesting is that there should be a value proposition to be materialized. What does this mean is that you not only have a sort of multiple actors, and then you can call actors, for example, entrepreneurs, universities, the government, the media, NGOs, incubators, accelerators, you name it. And many cities will have all these type of actors there. But if you don't have these actors well connected, exchanging particular resources and working together, coordinated to materialize a value proposition, then you don't have an ecosystem. That's what really makes an ecosystem different than just having a set of a network or knowing people and having stakeholders around. An ecosystem has to be organized with the ambition to materialize something, which in most of the cases is entrepreneurial growth, economic prosperity, support to social enterprises, and so on and so forth.
All right, wonderful. I think now that we've kind of touched base with the foundation of these concepts, why is social entrepreneurship important? Because usually when people think about solving these big, wicked problems, a lot of people turn to governmental institutions or to charities. So what is something that makes social entrepreneurship so important in this aspect?
I believe that social entrepreneurs, as conventional or mainstream entrepreneurs, are very important. But what makes it relevant today is that we are confronted day by day. Every day we wake up with a different world challenge and problem. And I believe that it's becoming important or relevant in the sense that we do see many enterprises today that are trying to articulate their business and their business model to be compliant with society. They are putting more and more the sustainability component as part of their DNA. They feel that our world will not continue within our planetary boundaries if we continue doing business as usual. Now, social enterprises are, in my opinion, the most sustainable type of businesses that you can have. They do incorporate three different pillars. So you have the people, the planet, and the profit. Most now social enterprises are adding a four pillar piece, a 4P. And I think with this, we need to probably incentivize more the support that we can give them, because these are businesses that are there. They are also highly, some of them highly profitable. Some of them are creating a lot of impact. And I believe that in this way, we need to probably continue giving visibility to this new way of doing businesses. And I think also it needs to continue becoming important in the way we speak about them so that other organizations also pick it up. The government has to also pay attention to it. Investors has to pay attention to it. Universities has to do more to support them. So in this way, we need to bring this topic more into the agenda so that we have the attention of entrepreneurs towards developing businesses in this way and therefore giving back to our society and planet.
So you mentioned that we have to do more support to these social enterprises. So through your studies and your PhD into social entrepreneurship, what are the biggest challenges that social enterprises run into in today's world?
There are many, and thanks for the question, there are many challenges that social entrepreneurs will face. And don't get me wrong, social entrepreneurs are conventional entrepreneurs as well. So they will face any other challenge that normal entrepreneurs will probably have. But in my opinion, if you ask me about particular things that they really are struggling with, is the lack of a cohesive business model structure that is sometimes difficult for them, because social enterprises are hybrid business models. In one hand side, they have this drive, ambition, dream of doing good for society. And in the other hand side, they need to have a solid business idea. It has to be viable. It has to be sustainable, financially sustainable. It needs to grow. So they need to kind of balance these two things. So that's the first thing, having a cohesive type of business model when you can manage this hybridity. Second thing, we call it legitimacy or lack of legitimacy. People don't believe in social enterprises. If I am a social entrepreneur today and I go to the bank, and I will not give bank names here, but I go to a bank and I say, I want to solve the problem of lack of clean water in X country in Africa, they will tell you, oof, I don't believe in you. This problem or this intention has been there forever. Many people have been trying to do this forever and they have never succeed. So lack of legitimacy because people don't believe or people don't understand their business and intentions and ideas. Also, attracting human resources. Today, when you have a social entrepreneur trying to build a social enterprise, you need to develop teams, and you need to develop teams with people that think alike, that people that have the same level of altruism, people that have also the same sensitivity to social issues. People also, if I will hire you in my social enterprise, you probably want me to pay you as a normal company will pay you, because you need to want to have also a decent salary, a good compensation package, the last company car, the last phone, and this. This benefit social enterprises cannot offer you. And lastly, social enterprises has a very interesting issue with measuring their impact. If you want people to believe in what you do, you need to also be able to show to people what have you done consistently and over time. And if you are not able to measure that impact consistently and structurally, then it's going to be difficult to attract, maintain, and engage stakeholders to support your business model.
So, I mean, I've started Disorder, which is a social enterprise, and I recognize a lot of the issues you're speaking of, especially when it comes to finding a cohesive business model and finding that legitimacy. But I think the last point that you were touching upon about creating and measuring impact, that is probably the hardest thing that we've run into. Our mission is to start conversations around mental health. We believe clothing does that, and we can see it in our sales data, for example, in our word of mouth marketing, but really measuring it is extremely difficult. So if measuring an impact as a social enterprise is so important yet so hard, then how can we make it easier as social entrepreneurs to make sure that we can have the legitimacy, but also the self-assurance that we're doing what we set out to do?
The answer will be through a lot of support. You will need to surround yourself with the right type of people at the right type of moment. And I will explain. Measuring the impact for social enterprises requires a set of competencies and knowledge. Normally, when you have a traditional business, you will probably measure that impact in the way of products placed on the market, units sold, customers that you have attracted. It's very quantitatively oriented. When we talk about social enterprises, we are also talking about transforming the reality of people, transforming group of people, transforming the environment of people. And this goes through narrative. Is a more qualitative approach. Now, if you are a social entrepreneur and you are not trained on how to do this, how to really describe what you see, how to really, for example, engage into conversations with your beneficiaries and to understand what happened with them through your intervention, and how to bring this into measurement, then it's going to be difficult. So this is why it is actually a complex process for social entrepreneurs. Now, do they need to know this at the very beginning of their let's say, development of the company? No. But if they surround themselves with people that can provide this support, then it's going to be a little bit easier. Universities, for instance, can help. Also, investors can also help, because there are certainly different type of frameworks that you can use, different type of methodologies that are there, but you need to be educated on how to use it. And the key aspect here, but really the key aspect here, is consistency. You need to do the measurement the same way every single year, which means that you need to, in year zero, design the most appropriate way for you to measure. You cannot start measuring today one thing and in year five realize that you were not measuring, for example, one particular KPI, or you were not looking at one particular actor, or you were not talking, let's say, the questions that you were asking were now not really relevant. Because how can you make a comparison? How can you draw a baseline and then see how much progress have you made? So it's not only about the measurement itself, it's also about designing the strategy on how to measure. And for these type of things, you will need probably to surround yourself with the right type of support so that you can do it correctly.
And for someone starting a social enterprise now, how do you find that right support in the beginning?
That's the holy grail. That's interesting, because it's contextual based. So I was explaining, social enterprises are tackling social issues. So social issues are very different in different countries, in different type of communities, also in the way a social entrepreneur will tackle that issue. So then it will probably be very different on the way you really design what support is for you. Now, also, social enterprises, when they start, they have different degrees of needs, depending on the complexity of resources that you have at hand, but also the resources you will need. The lack of awareness of what you need could also be a challenge for you, in the sense that sometimes a social entrepreneur with a lot of ambitions and surrounded by many resources and with a lot of support, he or she cannot see it. Or he or she might think that the needs are probably somewhere there when the needs are a little bit less complex. I'll give you a concrete example. A social entrepreneur without real clear visibility on the financial needs could probably make mistakes because they don't know the level of commitments they are getting. The problem today here in the Netherlands or in countries around is not the lack of money. There is sufficient money to support social enterprises. The problem is that people, entrepreneurs, they don't know where to tap or where to go. You might think that you need an investor at the very beginning of your startup or your path becoming a social entrepreneur, but maybe you need just a donation campaign from your friends. Maybe you think you need the bank, but the bank could probably not be useful for you, but maybe you need to probably work with subsidies from the government. So you need to understand this complexity of the financial, let's say, landscape, but you also need to understand what type of support is the right for you, because sometimes support can also be evil. Sometimes when you engage with, let's say, a subsidy from the government, and it's a little bit of money, and then you have only two people working in the social enterprise, you will spend hours and days complying with all these reports of files, administration, bureaucracy, and you are forgetting of doing what you have to do. All the way around, if you have an investor, and that investor is not really clicking with your vision and your drive and ambition, that person can be also using the social enterprise as a vehicle to do what he wants and not what you want as a social entrepreneur. So you really need to have this smell, sense of smell of what exactly do you need and what type of support could be the right one for you at any given moment of your company.
I think we're working towards why ecosystems are so incredibly important then, because you were mentioning before it's about these different actors being related towards one another. Could you maybe expand on how ecosystems help social enterprises specifically to overcome these kinds of challenges and kind of develop that sense of smell, as you say?
That was probably what I was trying to study, and I continue to study that phenomenon. And I think we need to probably go step by step here. So social enterprises, as I explained, they might find different levels of challenges and different levels of needs throughout their pathway to addressing these social issues. Not only because of their size, not only because of their maturity, but also because of the level of impact they want to generate. Now, depending on where they operate, these social enterprises might identify within the ecosystem different layers of how the support is mobilized. In one of our publications, and I think this is one of the papers I enjoy the most, we talk about why do people help, or why do people care to help? And this is one of the first sense that social enterprises they need to develop, because it's not about talking about support, it's understanding who can give me what type of support and why. And this comes as, why do I help? So if you see this, if you take all the ecosystem actors, you will find that some actors are just helping just because they find pleasure to help, altruism. Just because they are there, they wake up and they feel this need, this compromise, but also this ambition to support others. And this, regardless of the position they have, it could be a rector of a university, it could be someone working in a bank, it could be a bus driver, it could be someone in a church. They just want to help, regardless of their position. Now, they might use their position and status to mobilize other people to help. And this is interesting. There are other actors who we place into a communitarian type of support. They are there, they are designed to support. And this is where you have to see the two sides of the coin. Because although they are designed to support, some of them, they do it because of their obligation, but some others, they do it because they really want this support to be placed into the market. And last part, there is another level of support in which is a commercial type of support. We call it commercial because it comes also with a transaction. Is this needed? Yes. It's very important to have this commercial support in the ecosystem because it brings balance. All support cannot be for free. You also need to pay for some particular services. And this also helps economically to develop an ecosystem in which the services are balanced. Yeah. So I think this is the first level of understanding based on your business model and understanding that social entrepreneurs, they need to use. Volunteers, for example, will be placed in the first level of support, in the altruistic level of support, in which you work with people, you mobilize people based on clicking on emotions, ambitions, sense of community development. And based on this, we go to the second part. The support within the ecosystem operates in different dimensions. So there is another publication that we develop on how the support goes around, and you have three different levels of categories. Well, these titles of the categories, we just came out to put something, a sexy title on these categories. But we have the DNA, we have the hardware, and we also have fuel. That's good. I was looking at the figure in the other way around. But okay, the first thing is the fuel of the ecosystem. So when you are an entrepreneur yourself, social entrepreneur, you have to close your eye and see what is exactly bringing fuel to this ecosystem, as if when you're going to put fuel on your car. You need to see what are the diversity of actors that are present there. You need to be able to understand what they are doing. You need to see also where is this qualified human capital in the ecosystem. And you need to see that it's very important to have a variety of different actors. Actors that you want to work with and actors that you don't want to work with. This also brings this complexity to the network. It's the fuel. It's really what brings the ecosystem alive. You need to have the hardware. And this hardware is also part of the support that people require. Hardware, we refer to physical hardware, physical type of things in the ecosystem. Universities are very important there. Universities bring a lot of different levels of assets and support based on their qualified human capital, based on universities are producing knowledge, but also universities are surrounded by people with extensive networks. Universities also have infrastructure, buildings, rooms like this one, that you can use for free. And of course, when you talk to entrepreneurs and social entrepreneurs, they sometimes are a lot of the majority of them will be disappointed by universities because they don't find the right support. They go and they spend a lot of time. People are not paying attention to them. It's normal. My answer to this is that universities are universes. So you really need to be able to read to whom you talk in the university, and you need to knock on the door several times. If the door is not open, then you go through the window until you find the right type of person. Because believe me, from what I have seen in my short life, within universities, you will find a lot of support beyond what you have expected. There is a lot of people based on their research agenda, based on their interest, based on their altruism that are able to help you, but also to mobilize help for you. Don't forget that universities are very neutral places in society, well connected with industry, also well connected with the government, well connected to the community. And this neutrality of university brings also the attraction of further resources. Universities might be an umbrella to bring legitimacy to social enterprises. If you are working with a university or have been working with a university, or if you are sheltered by a university, your business model immediately gains legitimacy and could be easily introduced to other people that can bring further support to you. That is a concerning the hardware. Now, an important category is the DNA. You need to be able to understand what is the DNA of the ecosystem in which you are navigating. When we talk about DNA, we talk about very particular contextual characteristic of the ecosystem in which you live. So it's like the DNA of the human being. It's in one person and hopefully not in another one. So it's very, very particular, and you need to understand that there should be a culture for entrepreneurship, also a culture for understanding failure, and also promoting business resilience, and a culture also from the government to provide support by strengthening the business model, let's say, providing also stimulating that social enterprises are there and giving visibility to success cases. So people are always prone to support and to help them.
So we talked a lot about now finding the right person as well to support, and what is your why to come into this? And I keep on thinking back to what I've done with Unshackled as well, trying to find the right person. And sometimes you just get this gut feeling of like, I don't like you as a person, or I don't think you should be part of this. Now, I also keep thinking that when it's with social entrepreneurship, the world we live in right now, there's a lot of people out there trying to look better themselves. So as a social entrepreneur, how would you advise them, or how would you say that some of these red flags are that you could then identify when you're having a meeting with these people, that you make sure they're not just joining your company to boost their own image, but actually there because they really want to help you as a person and as a company?
I think this is a lot of trial and error, and this will be also part of the maturity from the entrepreneur. I believe their key word here is motivations, the motivations of why do you do this. There is a very thin line between doing things because you want to do good and also doing things because other people want to see you doing good. This is a very key factor here. And I believe that it's just about, what you said, and I also go with this in my own personal life. I got also by gut feeling. I like to talk to people. I like to see people through their eyes. And I like to understand what is exactly the why. What is exactly the motivation here? And don't forget that, let's not forget that social entrepreneurship has also a dark side. There are also social enterprises, unfortunately, in the world, which are designed to do good, but their unintended consequences in society are very negative, or has been proven to be negative. This, for example, business model in the past, which they wanted to sell, for instance, shoes in the global north and give shoes for free in the global south, which was a very interesting idea. And it's a social enterprise that I really admire for what they have done. But at the very beginning, they were putting at risk people in the global south producing shoes because they were staying without a job. I mean, if you are just giving for free shoes, how the local shoe producers will have a decent living income? So their are these type of unintended consequences that you can have, but also there are social enterprises that has been used to for greenwashing or has been used also for bringing to you a little bit of a better type of image if you are investing in there. So, of course, this is a phenomenon that hopefully stays as it as they should be, doing good for society and doing good through businesses. And you need to probably be able to read people's intention, really read people's motivation, and also not only those who wants to work with you, but also those who wants to support you financially, contextually, business-wise. You need to be able to surround yourself with people that are going to be, for you, doing good.
And I think one thing on ecosystems beyond that as well is this symbiotic relationship that can form. You were just speaking of how universities can form this umbrella for wonderful stimulation of social entrepreneurship. But I think it's important to note that it can go both ways and that the universities can also really win from this. Could you maybe tell us a bit more about how these symbiotic relationships play out?
Interesting. And this probably is a message to my colleagues. I believe that there is a lot to win here. Ideally, an university, the function of an university ideally is to develop knowledge, develop fundamental knowledge that could be easily transferred to society. This transfer of knowledge, normally, for example, if we see it from an engineering perspective, will occur through a patent or an invention. Think about a chip, an antenna, a new wheel for a car, etc. So this is knowledge that is, has been generated in a laboratory, has been tested, has been proven, and has been sold to society, or there is a spin-off company that also goes in there, and so on. So in social sciences, it's a little bit different because we don't have these linear equations, so to say. When you are working to generate knowledge, you need to think that the responsibility of universities being embedded in the community is to also do or generate knowledge that is doing good for society. Therefore, social enterprises here enters quickly into the equation. If you want to see or support from the entrepreneurial perspective how an university can be an actor that contributes to the community, you need to see that the universities can probably help these social enterprises to further develop their business model. How do you do it? In different ways. If you are teaching in any university, I always say that we have three different levels of customers. We have, in a business school, we have students who come because they know that they will be for the rest of their life employed in a company or will be dealing with their companies of their parents. Second, you have students who become or come here because they want to be an entrepreneur. And third, you have students who have no idea what they will be doing with their life. These are my three different levels of customers. If you are a professor, one way to support this whole process is to stimulate that the three different levels of group think about social enterprises and entrepreneurship in general as a force for driving the community towards the better. How, if you are going to be working in a company, how this company can support businesses or local businesses. If you are an entrepreneur, how to develop this chip on bringing sustainable type of components to your business model. And if you don't know what to do, how to become a social entrepreneur. Now, we cannot dream that everyone here in the classroom should be educated to be an entrepreneur. You need to educate people to be aware about how to really read entrepreneurship and to have the elements on how does it work. Now, at the research perspective, you need to probably conduct research in a way that is also meaningful for society, for the stakeholders. Conducting research in these type of topics can only help us to understand better the phenomenon. Do we know everything? No. Do we know how does it really function? No, which is interesting. And I think this is just exciting. Can we know better? Yes. By digging into, by bringing more entrepreneurs into the scene, by talking to them, by observing the phenomenon in different ways, by bringing innovative ways on how to do this type of research. And of course, a third way of how universities can win in this relationship is through different type of projects. as the one I described at the very beginning, there also are projects with, that you can develop with the government, projects that you can develop with different research networks, projects that you can develop with all different ecosystem actors, in which universities goes in there to play a particular role, but also to learn from the process. So there is always a way in which universities continuously builds their capacity, knowledge, entrepreneurial capacities, educating capacities, so that you can do better for your students, but also for the community.
And then maybe bringing it down to more day-to-day level things. Sebastian and I, part of the reason that we're starting this podcast is to strengthen the ecosystem here in Maastricht and Limburg. But maybe you can give us some different ideas of how people can strengthen their own ecosystem to make it stronger so that they can get the support and that they can work towards something better.
One of my main advices always is not what you can get, but also what can you bring to the ecosystem. It's a two-way street. I think the first thing is to be able to see who are those actors, to easily recognize where are they, what do they do, what can they bring, but also go with baby steps. Sometimes, in my opinion, in complex cities like, for instance, Maastricht, where you have at least all the different given conditions to develop a very strong ecosystem, people tend not to really start by putting actors around a table. You need to dare, and dare to bring this type of initiative, dare to put people together on a table, go, for example, to have a drink with them, talk about your challenges openly, because ecosystems are places to exchange not only success but also failures. To be outspoken about your needs, to be outspoken about what exactly can you receive, because it's about creating a demand of what exactly is needed. So if ecosystems are not alive, if you don't put energy, if you don't put your time, if you don't dare to talk to people, then possibly this is not going to work around. So I believe that in the business model or in the business day-to-day activity of social enterprises, you need to also make sure that you are investing time in developing the ecosystem, in connecting with others, in not seeing other entrepreneurs or other people as your competitors, but seeing mostly as a competition. How can I cooperate with them so that we bring something and we build something together that will benefit all of us together?
So I think we're in quite a unique position where, Abel, you are primarily an academic, but as you said, you've also had this project where you were very much a practitioner and you were very much going out there and talking to people, asking them, how can I help? And I think there's a big misconception where people see academics and practice as a very separate thing. But is that disconnect really there? And if not, how can we reconcile it? Or if yes, I'd be keen to hear more.
The first thing is that I am a very much a normal human being, very much normal human being. In my day-to-day life, I just enjoy doing things as any other people. But I do, of course, understand very well the question, because we talk about being academics being inside this ivory tower, no? That they only close their eyes and open their eyes and only see science and the developing of knowledge and reading academic papers, writing these academic papers that little people will read or understand. So I perfectly understand from what the question comes from. Now, what I can tell you is that in the entrepreneurship field is absolutely different, because you cannot theorize or understand or conceptualize entrepreneurial things if you are not in contact with entrepreneurs. It's impossible. You cannot probably understand what they are going through. You can also not understand what exactly do they need. And what brings also a little bit of this flexibility to me is that I am a very much people-oriented person. In studying social entrepreneurship and ecosystems, you really need to be out there. You really need to be able to connect with people. You really need to be able to develop your own ecosystem for research, which brings you also out of the normal setting of an office or sitting in your computer writing. You need to be also having the opportunity to observe. And this is clear. you need to, as an academic, to constantly observe. I am a qualitative researcher, which also brings you also also some other type of skills. You need to be able to observe, immerse yourself in realities. You need to be able also to walk through different type of communities. And this, I think, goes hand in hand on how people are probably, let's say, using their academic positions to bridge the two worlds. And this is probably how I see myself. I normally easily connect entrepreneurs and explain them how to navigate the complexity of an university, bring also many entrepreneurs to my class, bring the class to entrepreneurs, but also I use my position and my day-to-day type of obligations to bring the university closer to what the society really needs. And this is what keeps me busy at night. How can I really make sure that what I have at the university and what we do as a university is useful for society? And for me, society goes in different levels. An entrepreneur, a community, other, let's say, less developed universities, small communities, an incubator. How can I make sure that I can myself contribute little by little and making my own small contributions there? And this is, and of course, when I do it, I also do it with an intention, which is for me to observe, to learn, to validate, to understand further the phenomenon. I have been talking today here about how ecosystem works. I have done this talk, I think, in the 5 different continents. I do it also with very sophisticated universities, less sophisticated universities. I ask them the same questions and I learn and I validate and I learn also for myself so that I can probably nurture my own research further.
And then I'm curious, why did you become a researcher as opposed to a social entrepreneur yourself? Could you explain, or maybe there's a misconception that I have on it?
I think as a researcher, I am a social entrepreneur myself. But probably you didn't know this story. I was myself a social entrepreneur before. I found a social enterprise as well, and this was back in 2019. So based on the research I was conducting in Bolivia, we found different type of group of artisans, people who wanted to sell scarf and sell also very sophisticated and nice garments made out of alpaca. They mentioned to us that the main complexity for them was to find a market there in Bolivia where they were living. Beautiful products. I still keep my scarf, by the way. The alpaca is like the gold of the fabric. And of course, in Bolivia, this type of scarf will never be sold because they become a little bit expensive. The raw material is expensive itself. So then we said, why don't we start trying? And why don't we help them by bringing these products to Europe? So we, the first 2-3 times, we just put the alpaca scarf on our luggage, came to Belgium, and started to sell these products on a table, in a fair or in... And it started to work and then we said, okay, we need to probably formalize this business. So we incorporated a company in Belgium, and we started to sell these products structurally. We developed a business plan, and this was also part of my PhD. Or alongside with my PhD, we developed a business plan. We were just importing this material, developing the whole supply chain, but also with the ambition on how to develop capacities in this group of people, so that we are not going to be there forever for them, but also to teach them how to do themselves this structurally. That was part of our ambition. It was difficult to sell these products or to introduce these products in Belgium, because it's a product that you buy only once and you don't buy a scarf every day. Of course, these are really good scarf. So we were doing home parties, so we were telling you, okay, can we bring our alpaca scarf to your house, and we will bring, and then you bring your friends, and then we were doing a party, but also explaining the concept of the company. And it was starting to go slowly well until Corona came. And then, of course, no home parties, no fairs, no exhibitions, nothing. And then it was the end of my social enterprise. Did I learn a lot? Yes. Was it painful? Of course. Did I lose money as well? Everything? Yes. But it was a nice experience that helped me a lot to also realize how difficult it is, and also to realize how can you probably do better and how the ecosystem is important. Yeah.
I'm curious, what is research that you're currently conducting? Could you share something about that?
The part I can share. I'm currently busy in different type of projects. So I'm now working, I think it's a very hot topic on ecosystems. And it's not about the elements, the composition, the organization, but it's mostly about how to really maintain the dynamics. And this maintenance of the dynamic comes hand in hand with the governance of the ecosystem. How is the composition of the leadership component of the ecosystem, the real motivation of actors? So at the very beginning, as in everything in life, there is a momentum. People are happy, people are excited, people want to be part of this ecosystem. You go to the first two meetings and you want to go to the third one. But at a certain point, it just becomes part of your landscape. You don't care anymore. You don't see any added value. You don't see anything happening to you. So now what I'm exploring very in-depth conceptually and also empirically is how are the most optimal ways to organize these ecosystems? How do you really orchestrate these dynamics? What are the governance mechanisms that should be in there? And this applies to social innovation ecosystems, because we talk about different levels of ecosystem, but how does it really happen in the social innovation space? A second project that I'm working on, which I think has been fascinating, is everything that is at the intersection of family businesses and social enterprises. Family businesses account for 70% of the businesses around the world, and social enterprises, they do need support, as we have been talking for the past hour. So how can family businesses provide this type of support? If and how, and what are the most exemplary cases? What can we learn? What are the different pathways? How can we really see these two, let's say, entities coupling together for the betterment of the communities? Because family businesses and social enterprises are very well community embedded. You have the local bakery that has been there forever. You have the local brewery that has been there forever. You have the local transportation company that has been there forever. So how do they support each other? Because everyone wants to give back to the community. And I continue also, of course, to conduct a lot of research side projects on universities, social enterprises, COVID and universities, well, and other ideas.
Very cool. I'm very curious about what the results of these projects will be. So I'd love to hear it and see it. Then a bit of a big question. What would you like to achieve in your career and why?
That's a very big question. I receive this question often. Last week I was in Spain and I received this question from a colleague. We were in her car. And I told her I should record a podcast about this question, because also it comes together with will you also go back to Colombia at a certain point? And I think that what I want to achieve now is to perhaps continue helping people in different ways. I find a lot of passion helping my students. I find a lot of passion helping entrepreneurs. And I think I am not that egocentric person. You will find that many, let's say, academics, they want to continue publishing and publishing and publishing higher. I think what it's important for me is to support people, to support also colleagues, to support also the field. And this is probably what I want to continue achieving. Now, about Colombia and how Colombia plays here, I think Colombia is with me all the time. I work with them often. I work with them in several projects, actually. I bring together different colleagues from Colombia to these type of activities. I conduct research with them. So the fact that I'm not physically there, I don't feel that I'm not living there. And this is something that I want to continue working towards developing capacities in places where resources are not given, and where probably contextual factors are really impeding them to go any further.
So, Abel, we have a closing tradition on our podcast where we ask our guests to bring a personal item of meaning for themselves. What did you bring for us today?
I brought a copy of my dissertation, my PhD dissertation, and since I was explaining in the very beginning, it's not about the content of the dissertation because probably no one has read it after it has been published. Maybe not even me. I went through it. But it's what it really meant for me and for other people around. I think throughout the process of this dissertation, I developed many type of skills, of course, knowledge, of course, also probably contributions to our field. But I was able also to uplift the life of many people, colleagues that probably were not even close to this field, colleagues that were probably involved in, let's say, in other type of, I would say, responsibilities, rectors, vice rectors, director of international relations, professors from accounting, from finance, not knowing what social entrepreneurship meant. And today, they are the biggest fan. But also, let's say, bringing accidentally or through effectuation many universities closer to this field. The day of my defense, that unfortunately was through Zoom, I was presenting. Of course, I was very nervous. I presented what I had to present. And at a certain point, and I was sitting in the computer, but I was not able to see who was in the Zoom because I had my slides. I maybe saw 3 or 4 faces there. At a certain point, it finished. I closed the presentation, and I saw 90 people there. 90 people from all these countries. I saw more than 300 comments. It was overwhelming for me to see all these, let's say, levels of my life together. That was really beautiful. So I think this has been really nice, and it has been also really nice to see what happened afterwards. For many people, and I keep on telling this to PhD students, for many people, the graduating from the PhD is the end. I always say it is the beginning if you do it correctly. And it has been the beginning for me. It has been opening a lot of doors. It has been bringing me together with too many people. It has also been an opportunity for me to understand that life, despite of being, of course, an academic and doing research, can be meaningful in so many different ways. And this is something I was able to discover myself after this part of the process. And this is why this, for me, was a milestone. Also the first one in my family reaching this level of education of my neighborhood, I believe, also was meaningful. And I think this is an incredible happiness, an incredible journey. And I'm here, as I said, to continue supporting others to achieve it.
Thank you very much for coming on our podcast and sharing your incredible insights into your own endeavors and into your research. It was truly great.
If people want to look for you, then where can they find you?
I am very active on LinkedIn, so you can just look me up on LinkedIn, and hopefully you can also find me here in the university in the years to come.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode. If you like today's conversation, please give us a follow on LinkedIn at First Moves. And if you'd like to see more behind-the-scenes content and highlight reels, go give us a follow on Instagram, First Moves Podcast. And please leave a review. It will help us make the podcast better and bring better guests to you in the future. Thank you.